Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We have no choice but to embark on this perilous journey.
Well, folks, it's time for Do More, episode 2, with Tim Batt and Guy Montgomery.
That's right. We've found a wonderful little thoroughfare. Genuinely at this point a thoroughfare. It's not a nook. This is right in the guts. This is the main artery of the mall.
That's right. We've got people now, and if you're a Patreon supporter, you'll be able to see that, because this video is for you. That I winked at the camera.
Yeah, nice. So I got to say, that second screening flew by. All things considered, I thought that was going to really drag. We went to a different cinema, same size, 240 seats.
That's right.
Us plus eight other cinema goers. And we watched more or less the same story unfurl in front of us.
It would be hard to argue with that.
Albeit with a little bit more panache, a little bit more pizzazz. I am surprised to report, I think I enjoyed it more.
I did too. Well, we got kind of high for it.
Yeah, I think that would have been doing a little bit of the heavy lifting, undoubtedly.
Probably helped a little bit.
There were more laughs. There was more clarity. I could see the through lines. I also found that in between watching it and coming down here, this is a movie that took either 19 or 21 reshoot days because early tests showed that the comedy wasn't working.
Oh, I see. And I can understand that, and I'm basing that statement on one particular attempt, which is the... It's going to keep me up tonight, I know it. The scene where Doolittle's talking to the stick insect, he's getting the hot word because it's been planted as a spy in the Queen's room to keep an eye on things. And then he, for no reason in particular, reveals that Sticky, like all leaf insects, I think he says, speaks in eight-syllable sentences.
Yeah.
And then proceeds to give a sentence that has seven syllables.
He does an eight-syllable sentence.
Eight-syllable first, and then quickly followed by a seven-syllable sentence. And he says, wait, that was only seven syllables. And then goes back and adds another, like, 10 syllables.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening there. It's not a joke.
It's just
something that's, like, incongruent.
It's interesting because I feel like it's... I don't know if that was in the reshoot, but it's like...
You remember the sand wedge incident?
Yes, is this where you are with
it? That is what it is for me. It's like, is this a joke? I don't think it qualifies as one. I'm not sure what it is if it isn't a joke.
It's a mistake. I think it's a genuine error that you've got just left in the movie because it's not designed to be seen more than once. They didn't think about this.
It's one of those things where I did see it the first time and I just didn't have the confidence to kind of throw it around and...
It does. I mean,
it's highly confusing.
I agree.
Do you know what to make of it? Like, what is it? Because he just says it, and then they move on.
Well, this is the thing. I think it's one of the, like, for all of the extra days shooting they did to get comedy, I feel like they still used a lot of the footage that they had, and a lot of it didn't quite work. Like, we referenced in the previous episode scenes that last for about 10 seconds that then amount to nothing. Like, when they go to the island and they break in, and there's like a scene of him.
You think you're going to get The Rock with Sean Connery. They kind of set it up for this caper where you're going to see Robert Downey Jr. You see him for 5 seconds scaling a building. He puts his hand on a like a gargoyle type sculpture. The thing breaks off. He almost dies. And then suddenly we're just inside the gates.
Absolutely. And there's no need for it to be there. Another one is they meet that they get given a stowaway ship and they're on the ship. And then someone's like, oh, we've got company. And then they pull like a blanket off of a guillotine that someone has been kept prisoner in. And the prisoner says, hi, I'm Jeff. And that is all we get given.
It's such a setup for him to be like a fun new addition to the team. Is he going to double cross them? What's his story? We never see him again.
I don't quite understand. They've left in all of these bits of setup that absolutely go nowhere.
The dancing monkey, which is far and away the best thing in this film.
It's an Antonio, it's after an all is lost moment.
Yeah. So Dr. Dolittle just gives up. He's like, well, I guess I live on the island now. I'm on the island's doctor. And he says, everyone, we've failed. This is it.
I'm taking patients.
I'm taking patients. Cash only. And then... I don't know where this goddamn orangutan turns up with a great hat and just does a great little dance.
Yeah, it says, I've got dancing fever.
Yeah, that's right.
Watch out, everyone. It's contagious. And it goes for 5 seconds. And then
it's
that's
so
all you get.
So good.
It looks like the Dunstan from Dunstan
Jackson. Absolutely.
Jackson.
But wearing like cool clothes.
Yeah.
Wearing like some real boho outfit.
I feel like there are all these moments that are like, they allude to something more.
Yeah, there was
the
another
broader
movie
scene
here.
Didn't make sense. But they must have spent enough time or money on them. They're like, well, we're going to keep them in. I don't know why.
Do you... Okay, are you ready for me to lay the theory on you?
Before you do, yes. I just want to say, while that was your point of frustration was that line, like all leaf insects, spoken in 8 syllables, and then, you know, absolutely blows up the logic of the word they've set up. The worst line in the movie for me, hands down, and I feel so bad for Craig Robinson, who voices the squirrel who's shot and then joins the adventure... Because he got given like several, he got given one through line of jokes, which is he's doing a running captain's journal, and none of that works. And at one point, there's a cutaway to him. I can't remember what's just happened, but some stuff has happened. And it shows Craig Robinson as the squirrel, and he says, I bought a front row ticket to Crazy Town.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that is pain by no. That is there's like a, someone a, up at 3 a.m. Like, if I just get this draft out, I can finally go
if
to
I
bed.
If I can finish this page, get it to the studio.
It doesn't need to be good yet.
No, no, no.
It can become good
but
later.
Then that's the shooting script. There's a lot of those where you've just got so many famous people that everyone's got to have like a catchphrase, but there's not a lot of time. So everyone gets 4 words. So it's like, you got John Cena goes, dream work, teamwork makes the dream work. Then someone else says, that's what I'm talking. It's just all of that kind of innocuous shit.
Yeah, it's
just so people can get paid. Put
I
some,
guess so. But
some meals on the
especially
table.
That one. I got a front row ticket to Crazy Town. Just reeks of like catchphrase comedy. And it would almost, like, it would work on me, I guess, if I was 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Like, you'd howl with laughter.
Yeah, and that's who it's for. The funny thing for us is that you keep telling me that the squirrel is voiced by Craig Robinson. I keep hearing it. I'm like, it doesn't sound like Craig Robinson to me. And then I figured out that the person I had in my head was Craig Ferguson, who is A, white, B, Scottish-American, and C, quite a, like, recognizable voice from late night television of yore.
Absolutely not in the movie.
No, I was like, this guy sounds black to me. I don't think you got this
only
right.
Craig Ferguson. This movie's really skating the line that Robert Downey Jr. first ran in Tropic Thunder.
Absolutely, they're forging a new path.
Now please, you turned to me halfway through the movie after about 5 minutes in, you said, I'm about to get unbelievably high.
Yes.
And then you nudged me and asked if I had a pen before you rifled through all of your pockets for 10 minutes to reveal a pen. And then not 10 minutes later, you grabbed me by the arm with a wild look in your eyes and said, I have a theory I need to lay on you, bro.
Yeah, man. Should I try and do it without notes and see how far I get? This might whatever be a classic Timbo mix-up.
I think whatever you believe will do
Let's
a better job of communicating the theory.
I think we are dealing with a Princess Leia and Luke situation in this film.
Okay, for those
what's
of us who
name?
Are uninitiated.
Scuggins. What's the
Stubbins.
Boy? Stubbins.
What is a Leia and Luke situation?
I'll explain. Well, let's leave that for the end. So.
No.
We'll get to it.
Okay.
So, there were all these loose threads that the movie had left for us. And I was like, there's no way that all of these loose threads mean nothing. And I reckon there's another at least 20 minutes of this film that they cut out. And you know when you like make an edit out of one bit, it's like, well, that bit of the story doesn't make sense, so I guess we're gonna take that out, and it's like a house of cards. You got to remove suddenly like 20 minutes of film just because everything else like interwove to the thing you took out.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's happened. There's all these weird specific clues the movie leaves. The kid, what's his name again?
Stubbins
does not live with his parents, and we hear that for a reason at the start. The guy says, who's Finchie, he goes, I don't know how your sister put up with him. So we know that he's now living with his uncle and aunt.
And even earlier than that, he calls him uncle. Like, they make a point of it. He does not live with his parents
yet. Yeah, exactly. So we don't fully know who his folks are. I cannot retain this boy's name.
Stubbins
goes to the lair to retrieve the diary, right? And Antonio Banderas's tiger strewn lair.
Barry.
He gets told to, the kid, Stubbins, gets told to put his eye up to the tiger painting, and then it will open the trap door. Now, this is the king of all the bandits and thieves on this island, right? He's booby-trapped this up. Like, this is got to be a lock. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
This isn't any old lock. This, you got to put your eye up to it. It's like an iris scan.
Yeah.
How is he able to open it? I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because it's configured for his iris, right? For Antonio Banderas' iris. And why does Tubbins, what is his name?
Stubbins.
Why is he able to open it? Because he's his son. He's Antonio Banderas' son. Now, what else do we know? We know that Antonio Banderas is definitely the dad of Lily.
Yes.
Dr. Doolittle's love.
Okay, wow, yeah. Okay,
now, what do
you
we
are
also...
putting some pieces together.
Now, what do we also know in the film? We never see the king. We have no experience of the king. We see a queen and we see a daughter, which is Rose. Oh, weird that she's got a flower name and Lily's got a flower name. Almost like there's a bit of a pattern there. Okay, so we don't know anything about the king vis-a-vis Rose's dad. Who is that? What else do we know? We know that for some reason in this kid's film, for no reason that gets revealed in the plot, there is a lot of enigmatic looks, a lot of longful gazes, a lot of suggestive expressions shared between the Queen and Doolittle when she finally wakes up. I think they've got history. I posit to you, Guy Montgomery, that Lady Rose is Doolittle's daughter. He's the dad. And so the fact that both the kids have a bit of a crush on each other, they don't know they're half-brother and sister. Vis-a-vis Leia and
only
Luke.
By law, not by blood.
Yeah.
Because who is...
Yeah, true.
If Lily is Antonio Banderas'
yeah, true.
Daughter...
Actually, good point. It's not quite a Leia and Luke.
Oh, I see. So Leia and Luke has been two love interests sent out to be siblings.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, through somehow. But what do you reckon?
Yeah.
Of the theory. It's good, right?
It's very good, yeah. And I totally agree with those...
I think that's what's happening.
Those sort of throwaway strands, you did put them together because there has to be more to it. There has to be a reason.
We find out all of these little things. And, like, why are they so flirtatious, the Queen and Doolittle?
I feel like it's not the only instance of flirtatiousness. I feel like that's another... I don't know if that's alluding to a backstory or if it's meant to be foreshadowing for a potential sequel, but there's definitely...
Foreshadowing for a sequel, having a little, like, cutaway glance...
Yeah, or like because
that's subtle, man. This is a kids' movie.
They set up romance throughout. That ostrich, voiced by Kumail Nanjiani, and that polar bear, voiced by John Cena, are definitely
in love.
They want to fuck.
They're in love, and there's a moment where you think you're like, cool. They're going to like insert a same sex storyline in here, like same sex love interest storyline, and then they're like, this
same
is
sex,
friendship.
Different species.
Yeah, exactly.
Interspecies, same sex. 2020, first, a family can look like anything.
No, no. First, you know, men want to marry men, and then suddenly,
polar bears want to marry ostriches.
This movie is
the Dickens stays were right.
This movie is the conservative nightmare of what would happen when we fought for marriage equality.
100%.
So yeah, that should have happened though. Real moment of tenderness. Yeah, man, absolutely.
Totally,
we don't need to like. I think it'd be nice to see them kiss, or at least acknowledge that they're in love, because they definitely are.
Yeah, but again, it's suggested but not shown, which is either stuff left out of the cutting room, stuff left in the cutting room floor, or stuff that's going to happen
but
in the second film.
They actually walk all the way up to a kiss between those two animals, and then they go, because we're friends.
Yeah.
Like,
it
gets taken away. It's not like... It would be cool if they cut the scene.
Reeks
and like,
of Disney.
Stinks of it. Yeah. Lousy with the mouse.
They won't let, you know, intersectionality arrive in their films.
No.
What was I going to say? It was something to the tune of... Speaking... if you're acting on a ship... Oh, longful gazes.
Okay.
If you are acting on a ship... And Dr. Doolittle, Robert Downey Jr. does as Dr. Doolittle. If you are acting on an old style ship,
yeah,
at some point in the movie, you're going to have to put one hand on like an arrangement of ropes that reach from the base of the ship up to the mast.
Yes,
you're going to have to lean out, holding the one hand, yes, looking like longingly across the ocean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And let the wind blow.
I'm telling you, he's going for Johnny Depp's role.
And the, yeah, and they do that, and they do it beautifully.
It is really well shot, that bit. It's like you're watching the movie poster, but it's animated.
Yeah, there are a lot of the trailer moments, and something you pointed out, like, you know, it's very satisfying playing trailer bingo and going bang, trailer, bang, trailer. One of my favorite lines from the trailer is when Doolittle says, "Hello, Barry," which is a scene between Doolittle and Ralph Fiennes the tiger, and Barry says, "Hello, lunch."
Not in the film.
You're hanging out for it all movie. Doesn't arrive.
They changed a lot of stuff, hey?
It's disappointing.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I would like to say that this film, with regards to Dr. Doolittle and his voice specifically, is like they gave, or actually not his voice specifically, this is like they gave the narrator from SpongeBob SquarePants an entire film. That's who Dr. Doolittle is.
Vocally, or just like vocally, the manner in which he tells the story.
Yeah, and just everything. Like, he's a pirate, he's on a ship. He can talk to like animals and various different anthropomorphic beings. The way that he talks is like, "Are you ready? Aye, aye."
Yeah, yeah.
Also, they've tried to ground Doolittle in the UK, and I think they figured out his accent wasn't doing it, because he says a few things which are unique to the UK. He calls a mouth a gob.
Yeah.
He says, you're going to get a hiding. He says, fair enough. Yeah. Like, they use UK-specific colloquialisms or language.
True. But then he also says, it's dangerous, mon.
Oh, yeah.
Well, like,
yeah,
in a weird Jamaican. Like, that's not British.
It's a huge expat Jamaican community in London.
That's true. I don't know where they were. So he's like Kingston to Kingston.
Yeah, yeah. He's
jungle to jungle.
He's breaking all the rules. What else do I have in here? Ridiculous. Yeah. One of the big moments in the movie that it all builds to, which we didn't speak about in the first one, there is a dragon in this movie. We talked about that. The movie sort of ends, Doolittle and the animals navigate their way to the Tree of Eden, which is outlined pretty early on in the movie when Dr. Doolittle's character accepts the call to adventure.
Yep.
He says, we have no choice but to embark on this perilous journey.
Perilous journey.
To find this fruit from the Eden tree. And yay, verily they do. And when they find the Eden tree, there's a dragon whose sole job is to protect it. Doolittle somehow, you know, seduces the dragon by speaking to the dragon in its language.
Well, I'll fill in just to get real quickly. So Doolittle is obviously suffering from heartbreak. That's why he finds it hard to leave the house and he's become a recluse. This dragon, he recognizes very early on, has some sort of emotional turmoil. Looks to the left, sees a skull of presumably its partner, you know, that it's keeping in the cave with it. So it goes, oh, okay, you're heartbroken, I'm heartbroken, I can use this to
absolutely
cool your boots.
And so he gets the dragon, and there's a sort of fearful scene where it's like...
Well, first the dragon kills and eats a guy.
That's right.
Which kills, is really weird.
Kills one of the naval officers. So that Michael Sheen's character, the villainous Scarlet Pimpernel, steals... That's not the name, but I'm just...
Go with
of,
it.
Yeah. Steals Lily's diary, which is why they've gone to the island in the first place, to recover Lily's diary from the king, Antonio Banderas, who's also yes. Lily's father.
Yes.
Michael Sheen takes it, destroys the ship, and I hate seeing ships get destroyed in movies.
You hate it, eh? It's such a waste. I'm like, it's like seeing people throw out food.
It really
but
bothers
really
me.
Big.
But it's anything. It's anything ornate that's destroyed. I'm like, no, don't ruin that. It was all
you
set
know
up.
Who you're going to hate? ISIS.
Oh, I hate when things, yeah, but I hate when people destroy infrastructure in the name of extremism as well. That really shits me. But anyway, they get on the ship. So Doolittle's dealing with the dragon at the end. Yes. This is like the crescendo. This is where all the action has been building to.
Yeah.
And the big reveal is that this dragon, in protecting the Tree of Eden, has had to deal with all sorts of cavalry and armies. This is why it's okay with eating people. And Doolittle starts performing like an anal extraction, like removing various different bits of miscellanea from the dragon's rectum.
Yes.
Amongst which included is like...
Skip over that. That's weird. It's pretty funny, but it's kind of...
Is it funny enough?
It's pretty full on to put in a kid's film.
Yeah.
First he rams a leak up.
Yeah,
up the jacksy of this dragon.
That's right. And then starts sort of withdrawing items, including an arm, a human arm. And then eventually it's like, well, where's this going to go?
Yeah.
And the big reveal is the reason this dragon was unhealthy or...
In so much pain.
Was because it had a bagpipe rammed up its asshole and he pulls out like a dry set of bagpipes, which doesn't seem right.
Well, you know, artistic license and all of that, but yeah.
And then it's like, oh, wow, congrats, you got the bagpipes out of my ass.
Here's some treat. Plot.
Yeah. And it seems like, I know it's meant to be a comedy, but there's so much work to go through. And then that's the end. And then from there, it's like, it's the opposite to endings from any other movies. Yeah. It's like, okay, I think we've run out of story here. Yeah. And then they like click their fingers.
They're at the queen's house.
And the the queen gets better.
Do we reckon there's a scene in between there maybe that got cut out?
The return journey,
You're supposed to have this all is lost
falling
moment.
Action.
It's supposed to go there.
No. All is lost was at the island.
But it was too early. That's what I'm saying. You're supposed to have that right before the end. So we get our dragon. The dragon helps them. It's cool. And then suddenly it's very much not cool. That's what's supposed to happen then. But it's... Anyway, look, maybe we're getting a little too analytical with this children's movie. But it did cost $175 million
to make. They put a lot of jokes in at the start. Like, until Doolittle...
Mouse chess?
Yeah, that's a great time. That's a great idea.
At the very start, like kind of the opening of the whole movie is... Well, it's funny for a few reasons. Doolittle has trained these mice to put little hats on indicating what chess piece they are, and then they move around the board, and he plays against his gorilla, voiced by Rami Malek. But you don't hear them talking English at the start. You just see them both talking gorilla.
That's the first time. That's like...
And Robert Downey Jr., to his credit, he gives it his all, and it is... odd and uncomfortable.
It's the same moment in Cats. Is like it's when that opening reprise in Cats comes in and you're like, I'm not in a safe space. This movie, this could go anywhere. And it's that when Robert Downey Jr. talks to three different animals, a gorilla, a dog, and something else, doing the voices, and you're like, oh, this is like, I don't know, they didn't figure this out before they made it, and we're going to live through that problem.
It's the gorilla noises in particular that are, because, you're right, he talks to all of them, but the gorilla noises, he goes all out, he kind of makes it sound like the gorilla is coming at one point, and he just, there's no barrier there. And I mean, good on him for giving such a shameless performance, but it is a shameless performance.
Nah, but it is fearless, and it does pave the way for that young actor, Stubbins, the boy who plays Stubbins, who phoned it in twice now.
Cubbins, gotcha.
he sort of mimics, when he's learning how to do it, he starts talking like an animal to the animals, even at one point talking like an animal to Downey Jr. himself.
Now, here's what I don't get, right? And we forgot that Jason Manzoukas is in this film, and it's always a pleasure to hear him. Even better to see him, which we don't.
He voices a dragonfly, love-lost dragonfly.
And Cubbins can talk to him, to the dragonfly, fluently, and it's the only animal that he pulls it off with.
He doesn't talk to the dragonfly.
Ah.
The dragonfly talks to himself in a way that it's like, because I was trying to catch him out with that same little hole, but no, they pulled it off.
Is it all good?
The dragonfly is talking to itself.
Well, it's sort of talking aloud to him, but he doesn't need any of the...
He doesn't respond or anything. Yeah. But from that opening bit...
He directs him, though. He directs him around the room a bit.
No,
he goes, Kitty on your six, and then he turns to his left and sees that tiger.
Could be a coincidence. You can explain it all away.
Yeah, okay, cool.
But from that crazy opening gambit when Danny Jr. is doing all the animal voices and all that nonsense, to like the moment Doolittle leaves the house, to the moment he's forced out of his house, it is packed wall to wall with not many of them work, but it's jokes. Like every line of dialogue is
Kumail
a joke.
Kumail Nanjiani's ones are good when he finally gets out of the house.
Yes,
actually, that's a bit of physical comedy, which strangely did work, even though it's digital effects. Because who does he trip up? Is it Robert Downey Jr.? Is it Doolittle?
Who?
He kicks him in the legs.
The ostrich.
Yeah,
when he comes out.
Yeah, the ostrich kicks someone over.
He's fighting the polar bear.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
it's because that's them sort of acknowledging that they actually like each other, even though they haven't got the emotional maturity to figure out how, or whether or not the world is ready for an ostrich and a polar bear to engage.
But the polar bear just arrives on the sea. The ostrich is like, "Fuck this!" It just kicks his legs from out of him. Yeah, he goes, "Nope, nope, I'm out of service. I'm not here."
Yeah.
He goes, "Uh oh." The dog. He comes out and he goes, "Ah, I'm looking forward to a lovely day of doing nothing. Maybe have a wander around the garden. Oh, Doolittle's up. He's coming towards me. That's not good."
Yeah, yeah.
And he just fucking kick sweeps the polar bear. He's like, "Nope, I'm not doing it." That was good.
He does well. The reason, though, I think that because you have been speculating a lot about these singles, especially on the boats, there's like shots of.
Yeah.
So I think the reason
we can't just explain what I was talking about.
Oh, it's just that Tim wants more context for the boat. But
there's a weird set of shots where the Scarlet Pimpernel and his lieutenant are talking on the boat, and they're standing right next to each other, but they keep showing them just by themselves
in
the
shots.
There's
19 to 21 days of comedy reshoots, and that's why we've got so many weird singles where it's like...
Couldn't get them on the same day, huh?
Yeah.
I reckon you're right. This is just notes pulling together the theory.
You worked hard on the theory.
The theory is sound, dude. I'm proud of the theory. And it was only on my second watch.
I got a good laugh out of when Dr. Doolittle was caught in the kingdom of Antonio Banderas and all of the soldiers pull swords on him. And one of the soldiers says, "Don't move." And then he touches the tip of the swords. And another one of the soldiers says, "Don't touch." That's good.
There's a little ADR addition. Do you reckon, because we didn't answer this the first time, I don't think, do you reckon people should go along and see Doolittle?
No.
I think if you can get to it for like $6, it's worth copping a load of Downey Jr.'s accent.
When I was watching it, I was like, what is it that makes everyone agree something is bad? Like, you know, because this has got 15% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm like, what is it that creates like universal consensus? Because taste is so disparate and everyone thinks different things of different... Yeah, you know, different creations.
And this is art, or it's attempted art, and art is subjective.
It's a movie, but like, why is it that we both know, and why does society at large knows that it's bad?
Well, I was thinking about this, because going into a movie like this with such loaded expectations of it being very rubbish kind of destroys everything.
Does it not set it up to be acceptable? Passable?
Well, yeah, it does, but then what's that? That's boring as well. It's like, oh yeah, it was... the shit movie I expected it to be. I'm not delightfully surprised by how shit it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's competently enough put together. But it's like what you were saying about it clipping along. It's like there's enough colours and bright lights and baubles
and
distractions.
It's not interesting in its badness, which can't succeed in being.
Exactly, yeah.
So this is why people shouldn't see it. It's just like you don't...
You're right, so maybe this is the ultimate movie to not see. Were it not for Robert Downey Jr.'s accent...
It's the one thing which like elevates it beyond just... bad across the board to like almost interestingly bad.
Yeah.
But surely someone's made a supercut. You know those videos that they put on GQ or whatever, their accent coaches who go through all their accents?
Yeah.
I would love to see a linguist sit down with Robert Downey Jr.'s character from Dr. Doolittle and just be like,
"Where are you from, my guy?"
Just guess. I don't know. I can't recommend people go and see it. I don't know how much longer it's going to be around for either.
Are we bleeding into the next... When's the next session start?
Yeah, we are. It started 10 minutes ago. So we've got 5 more minutes of ads or trailers.
Okay.
That's to get our tickets, to get any snacks we might want. Had a popcorn in the last movie. It was okay. Got a little bit cold. Didn't put my jersey on.
A few more people in. How did that change the experience for you?
They laughed 3 times.
I'm too beautiful to die. That was the squirrel. That was a laugh.
I wrote
point.
That down for, as a laugh. I did, and then after that, there were all these jokes that I expected to get laughs and didn't. And I was like, "This is a rough crowd." And I stopped charting it because I just felt bad for the movie. Who knows? We should have even more at this one.
You're not stuck out to me at the beginning. You forget all the stuff at the start, eh? the sanctuary, the animal sanctuary, which the Queen of England gifted to Doolittle and Lily. I mean, someone owned that. It was a fully built castle with a fully developed garden. Like, he opens the gates as if it's like, oh, cool, here's some land. Nah, nah, that was someone's. That's some colonial bullshit.
That to me is...
this is conquered lands, man.
Yeah, they would have...
That's why Lily got taken. It's bad juju.
Compensation. They would have tried to pay them out, you know.
The British royal family, famous for compensating people for their land.
Yeah, they bought them out.
Absolutely renowned for it.
They'll buy out aristocrats on their own land. They won't buy out anyone else.
They poisoned whoever was in there. They put a flag up and they said, this is Doolittle's little sanctuary.
To me, it's an early era of The Castle. The Australian movie The Castle, where the airport's trying to buy up the house owned by the Kerrigans.
Yeah.
There's a movie in there where the royal family are sort of trying to weasel their way into that estate so they can give it to Doolittle. And the family inside of it are trying to fight it. But unlike The Castle, where the Kerrigans triumph, this family was poisoned and killed.
They lost.
And then into Dr. Doolittle, into the movie that we're about to watch for the third time. We're running late now. We've got to go.
All right, we've got to go. We must do more for Doolittle.
We must.
We have no choice but to embark on this perilous journey.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.